And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. Tormented 5 months, and their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. Desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared into battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots, of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon.
So those were a few excerpts from Revelation 9, where the locusts come out of the pit. And those verses have been examined quite a bit in light of Bible prophecy as it relates to theories about the mark of the beast and there being a genetic component. You know, could that have something to do with why they suffer for 5 months, those who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads, and they seek death but cannot find it, and so on. And I'm sure most of you are very familiar with those questions and conversations. But genetics as a whole, obviously, is something that factors heavily into everything about Bible prophecy and transhumanism and that whole agenda fitting into the end times. And one thing that has been sort of on the back burner of my mind for a long time now, I suppose since kind of starting on this journey of questioning cosmology, which kind of develops into a questioning of science in general and starting to understand the occult and mystical inspirations of so much of that, and questioning things like atomism and quantum physics and all these things that I've been talking about for a while. I suppose you spend long enough time in that vein of questioning and research, and when you start to see a lot of the similar red flags around another topic, in this case, DNA, or deoxyribonucleic acid, it does make you wonder. And I'm not the only one who has wondered about this. And I actually wanted to read a few excerpts from an article that my friend Noel Hadley wrote last year in 2017 called The Molecular Path to Shamanism, Francis Crick and the Double Helix Delusion. Geneticists James Watson and Francis Crick, a molecular biologist, biophysicist, and neuroscientist by trade, conducted no DNA experiments of their own, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine. And yet in 1953, they discovered the DNA molecule, known as the double helix, by, quote, drawing upon the experimental results of others and relying on brilliant intuition, persistence, and luck. So there's your first red flag right there. But there is a missing ingredient here. As the story goes, Francis Crick burst through the front door of his Cambridge home, spouting barely legible gibberish to his then-wife about two spirals twisting in opposite directions from one another. Being herself somewhat of an artist, she put vision to paper, and like Walt Disney with Mickey Mouse, the coiling double helix was promptly born. To celebrate, the couple met up with research partner James Watson, and the trio drunk themselves silly at a local pub. It should be noted that Crick was a devoted fan of author Aldous Huxley. Red flag number two. He famously threw nude parties throughout the 50s and 60s, but most importantly of all, Crick was a devoted connoisseur of LSD. And indeed, you can find other articles where it is alleged that Crick actually, quote-unquote, discovered the double helix while being high on LSD. And supposedly they were taking small amounts of it to try and open their mind. Basically, they were microdosing, Crick and a bunch of these guys at Cambridge. But he was a devotee of Aldous Huxley. That's, in the 50s. That tells you a lot. But then Noel Hadley goes into the other main red flag, which is the ancient occult origins of the whole double helix image concept in itself, which of course is the caduceus, which is the staff carried by Hermes Trismegistus throughout ancient Greek mythology. And we all recognize this symbol from the medical hospital symbols as it's been associated with. But of course, it's much deeper and darker than that. And then he has a great line here. The twin serpents of the double helix seem to show up frequently throughout the annals of science, from the subatomic scale to the motions of celestial mechanics and even the coils of entire galaxies. Alleged galaxies. There's simply no escaping the ancient serpent. In Mutants and Mystics, Science Fiction Superhero Comics, and the Paranormal, author Jeffrey Cripple doesn't mince his words when writing on the oversaturation of the caduceus. It is at once the double helix scepter of the DNA molecule, the phallic serpent who brought sex and death into the world in the myth of the Garden of Eden, and a sign of the Kundalini, the two spiraled currents of energy that are likened to a serpent as they spark and spike up, down, and around the central channel of the spinal column in Tantric Yoga. Most of all, though, the caduceus is the staff of Hermes, the ancient Greek god of language and later occult philosophy, alchemy, and Western magic. The staff of Hermes has been a favorite for British comic book writer Alan Moore, the guy who did the Watchmen series and everything, who openly advertises the arts in its many varying forms to be deeply rooted in occultism. His comic book series Promethea was a cauldron for occult philosophy, Jewish mysticism, the tarot, tantric yoga, psychedelica, sex magic, and infamous, quote, spheres of the Kabbalah. Regarding his use of the caduceus, Moore explains, magic, after all, is ruled by Hermes. His symbol, the caduceus, its double helix serpents representing mankind's evolution. They wind apart and then recombine, progressing towards their ultimate synthesis, towards winged blazing godhead. But then he shows how it goes back even further than Hermes and the Greeks. He says, yet Crick's double helix discovery ventures even further back than the Olympian who supplied hermeticism to Western civilization. To this, the snake-worshipping Chaldeans deserve due credit, writes A.L. Frothingham in Babylonian Origins of Hermes the Snake God and of the Caduceus, 1916. The proto-Hermes was always a snake god, and before the era of complete anthropomorphism, he was thought of in snake form. But it is an essential element of his function that he is not a single snake, for the great single earth snake was the mother goddess, but the double snake, male and female, the most prolific form of copulation in the animal kingdom. So it goes back to the Chaldeans, which is the Babylonians, of course, just like everything else. Then he talks about Quetzalcoatl and ayahuasca and spiral ladders, and yes, you find it again and again. Anything to do with psychedelics and shamanism, It seems like this concept of the double helix they've been familiar with far back before Watson and Crick supposedly discovered this molecule in the 50s. And then, of course, similar to when you're researching cosmology and questioning so many assumed basic things about science and our understanding of the universe, when you start really looking into, well, what is the physical scientific evidence for DNA, specifically pictures and footage and things, and it starts to feel very reminiscent of when you start looking into NASA or pictures of the globe and such as this, because it was decades before anyone had actually seen what Crick had just burst in and suddenly had this eureka moment and understood that this was what it looked like through allegedly a psychedelic experience. And yeah, it's really hokey looking. Most of what you find is just animations, but the alleged true images of RNA replication and DNA strands is slim to none, and the stuff that you do see is pretty sketchy, I'll say that. So in Noel's article, he's basically pointing out these connections and then more or less looking at it like, you know, this is an introduction of occult philosophy and beliefs that are being encoded and, you know, spread to the masses and all of that. And I definitely agree that that's obviously happening, to where now every kid who goes to school is essentially learning about this concept of the caduceus, or the shape of the caduceus, but thinking of it in, you know, biological terms and materialistic terms. And for me, this is really the question that I keep coming back to, I suppose, because I've now been doing it with other things like the alleged physics of light and electromagnetism, and, you know, how do the heavens work and the luminaries, and what are the spiritual realities possibly behind that have just been concealed through materialistic pseudoscience. And then on into physics, you know, the subatomic world, the quantum stuff, been talking about that for a long time. And once again, it comes down to they're obscuring some sort of spiritual reality, some sort of spiritual agenda that is being presented and promoted and conducted through a completely materialistic framework. That's kind of the modus operandi you start to see through scientism just being a materialistic representation of occult beliefs and occult practices, and with an occult agenda which has to do with the spiritual realm, not just the physical realm. So when it comes to genetics and DNA, obviously tons of people understand that there is a spiritual connection to DNA, and there's an occult agenda, and this factors into transhumanism and possibly the mark of the beast or all these things. But at the same time, are we still making assumptions that we haven't thought to stop and question even further back in terms of whatever this reality of our, what makes up our genetics, does it really boil down to this chain of millions of little protein pairs, the RNA and DNA? Like, are they actual molecules in our body? Or is this perhaps another example of a spiritual reality that has been falsely presented in materialistic terms? And that's the question I'm asking right now. And wanting to look into this more. Because the more you really start looking into it, you see, of course, in the New Age realm, and Noel mentioned Kundalini, you see that all over the place with these dual spiraling flames or energies that go up the spine. And you even see it in, I think I've even shown this clip before, this is from a Tool video that was inspired by Alex Gray. I'm going to show, it shows the little flames going up the spine and spiraling like a helix. And it's something that comes up in a lot of Alex Gray art, with the DNA strands, the coils, all over the place. And he's, of course, a huge, you know, he's into DMT and LSD and psychedelics and occultism. And he just paints what he sees and experiences on these trips. I mean, in this one, it's crazy because he's got all these DNA strands coming out of the different chakras of the guy. And they're all feeding into this big ball of eyes and pyramid triangles, you know, the big all-seeing eye god, you know, Satan, basically. So he's being, like, basically genetically connected to Satan, but in a spiritual sense, right? So I mean, you could just go for days looking up stuff about DNA activation online and all the New Age stuff that talks about DNA in a transcendental way, all about, it ties into the whole alien deception and all that. The New Age alien deception is all about DNA and alien DNA, and I don't need to cover all of that. But the question I'm asking is perhaps DNA, what's really comprises DNA, is it perhaps a spiritual thing, a spiritual code, a spiritual blueprint that doesn't even necessarily exist in a molecular way, in a molecular form? And I don't even know how to really expound on that too much more. It's still just kind of a new concept to me, but it starts to make a lot of sense when you just think about various random things. For example, when you start just with Genesis and the Garden of Eden and the fall, and you think about when sin and death entered the world, when they ate the forbidden fruit, and suddenly their bodies would get old and die. They still lived a very long time back then, of course, but death became a reality. And so when we think about, like, okay, how does that really work? How does that connect to this concept of DNA? You know, was our physical genome altered when sin occurred? There's a lot of people that would hold to that kind of a theory. But again, is it because we're just assuming that this is scientific fact and not perhaps another form of scientism that is introducing occult ideas in this cloaked materialistic fashion? Another thing you think about is how the Bible says that the life is in the blood, and that's where you have all the dietary laws about not eating or drinking animals' blood, draining all the blood out of the meat before you eat it. And, of course, Jehovah's Witnesses don't get blood transfusions because they believe that, you know, that's some sort of abomination and the life is in the blood. But what if there is something to that in a spiritual sense that has something to do with this whole genetic reality being spiritual and not physical? I mean, even when you think about the incarnation of Jesus and Mary being impregnated by the Holy Spirit, or the Genesis 6 paradigm, and how did angelic being, you know, obviously the naysayers who reject the idea that fallen angels mated with humans understandably ask questions like, well, you know, how do they have genitalia? Like, how can angels even physically have sex with women? And it's a valid question. But even further, there's the question of, even if they did have genitalia that could apparently have sex, if they're not made of matter, they're not made of the same stuff that human beings and our physical bodies are made out of, and therefore wouldn't have physical DNA. They would have spiritual DNA because they have spiritual bodies. As being spiritual beings, they can manifest physically and touch and interact and eat even. The Bible talks about angels coming down and eating with Abraham, and the manna supposedly being the food that the angels eat. I mean, we know that angels can physically manifest, but still, on a genetic level, how does a spiritual DNA combine with a physical DNA if they're not even made out of the same underlying thing? But perhaps DNA is all spiritual, ultimately, and that's what's being covered up. And so it just kind of makes you stop and rethink a lot of things. So that's just something I'm pondering. I'm interested in any information that any of you might have that would pertain to this, or other questions that I think would tie in. But it's kind of fascinating. It really is. As Noel said, not many people are asking these questions. And I've been pondering it for a while, but at this point I think it's, especially when you consider the Aldous Huxley connection to Crick, that's kind of the clincher for me. There's no such thing as coincidence. So there's something to this, I'm quite convinced. How far it goes, it's hard to say, but I'm really curious to keep looking into this, and curious to see what else you guys might have come across, or what research you might have done, or just whatever. So feel free to share that in the comments below. Thanks for watching. God bless.